Shelley.
Hi, Pamela. Where are we going today?
Oh,
I'm excited to see. It's been seeing you in a while.
I know. Welcome back again. I know every time you guys hear this, I'm welcoming Shelley back from some world
travel.
Travel experience.
It's so great to be retired.
I wouldn't know. Someone asked me the other day, like, hey, like, when are you going to retire so that you'll have more time? And I said, let's see. I think I've only got about 30 years left that I have to work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm almost there.
Yeah. I was lucky and blessed. I don't know if luck was, but I was blessed with the way it panned out. But
yeah,
I am enjoying my retirement.
Almost two years in July.
Woo, woo, woo. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I also have a super special guest today. None other than my mom, the woman who raised me, Marie.
So say hello, Mom.
Hello, Mom.
Hi, Marie. So good to see you. I love this lady. She's such a great lady.
Thank you. Me too. She's awesome. She was a farm girl, and she taught us all how to work. But it was kind of like being raised also by Lucille Ball. Because she always had some crazy scheme, something goofy, silly, some idea cooked up for us to do. So she made us work hard, but we also played hard.
Like a water slide or something stupid.
Yeah, so fun. So fun.
And by the old swimming pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Then in 2013, I had a heart attack, and I actually died.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It was the scariest time ever.
I was in the hospital and they shoved a breathing tube down my throat. It wouldn't go down in my mouth, but said, no, the guys just said, shove it down. So they damaged my vocal cords. I only have one vocal cord.
I've right.
That for 10 years.
So that's why you sound hoarse.
Yeah, you're raspy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Always raspy.
But also, you need to tell them how young your mother is.
Oh, yes.
And spry.
My mom is 89, and I'll post a video of her at 89, because she's kind of worried about her balance, so I got her a trike, an adult trike.
Uh-huh.
Here's what's really cool. When I was a little kid, I had a purple trike.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't find a purple one when I was buying this one, so I got a blue one. So then I put a wrap on it. It now has a purple wrap, but in the video, it's blue. So you'll see her riding it. And my dog, Buddy, that you guys all hear about, Buddy loves when my mom goes and rides her bike, and she rides almost every day.
That's awesome.
She's been down here with me in Southern Utah. It is the cutest thing ever.
I love it that you're just so spry and young. I lost my mom. She was only 67 years old when she died.
Oh, I know.
That's so young.
Yeah. And here you are at 89, out riding your bike, still driving from one end of the state to the other, which
is a good
6-7 hours. You drive.
Yeah.
You have your full faculties. It's awesome. I just really admire you. I want to be you when I grow up, Marie.
Okay. Okay.
Right. Me too. Hey,
love you.
Me
love
too.
You.
Love you.
So I'm going to have my mom pop in and out here. So I'm going to put her in a couple places where she had some very personal experience with this case. And so that you can get that perspective too. So
this is a very personal episode. I was a little kid when this happened. My uncle was murdered.
Oh.
I was like 11 years old. It's a huge deal. Anytime something like that happens close to your family, I don't know if anyone listening, like it's such a rare thing.
Life altering.
Yeah. And this was my dad's brother. Let me give you some background on who he is. His name was Don. And he was, like, my dad was a stud, right? Big, athletic guy. Really funny.
Handsome.
Yeah.
Athletic. Charming. Oh,
thank
yeah.
you.
He was a sweetheart.
He was such
love
a sweetheart.
Him, love him.
And his older brother was named Don. And Don was a stud also. So my dad grew up in a really small town outside of like Provo, Utah, called Goshen, really small town. And my grandpa, those guys were all blue collar guys. They were millwrights.
Sure.
They made good money. They worked hard and then they drank hard. Those, my grandpa and my uncles. And so my grandpa would go on a job and my grandma, when he would leave on a job, she would move the kids and moved to Orem, which was like not terribly far away, but it was like
20 minutes away, 30 minutes away, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, which is kind of crazy. But my dad, BYU, which is the LDS Church's private school.
Brigham Young University. Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the 50s, they had a high school too that was like a private high school. It was called BYY. They wanted my dad to play baseball because he was an amazing pitcher. He actually ended up going to the minor leagues. And then when he was in Florida at training camp, the Yankees were talking to him, and so were the Pirates. But mostly it was the Yankees that wanted to have him come to their AAA team.
Uh-huh.
And my dad had just married my mom, and she was pregnant with my oldest sister. And what I love about my dad is he's a stud, but he was such a kind-hearted, loving guy. He missed my mom so much. And you didn't make any money in baseball back then.
No.
Even in the majors.
Especially the minors.
Yeah. Especially the minors. And he had ridden a bus from Utah to Florida to get to training camp. And so it took like a week to get there. And then they were talking about the minors. And so he was so homesick, he's like, no thanks. And walked away from that.
Came home. Wow.
So he was a pitcher and he was really good. And they were scouting him like in sophomore year, junior year of high school, the pros were scouting my dad. But because my grandma would move him to different high schools, my uncle Juan was also a pitcher. He stayed at the other high school. My dad got invited to go to BYU High.
Uh-huh.
So they ended up pitching against one another.
Oh,
in a game.
Fun, cool, really hard, really cool. All of those. Uh-huh.
And I mean, it was in the newspaper, like, these two brothers are playing against one another for the state championship.
Uh-huh.
And it went into extra innings, and my dad ended up winning. But those guys were, like, always studs, and my dad used to say how Don used to fight his battles for him and stuff. They were drinking, fighting folks, and my dad ended up joining the Mormon Church, which changed the course of not only his life, but mine too, which I'm thankful of because looking at my uncle's lives, like much different life they had than what my dad had.
Mm-hmm.
And
So,
and I'm just kind of giving you all background so that you
have a taste of what he's like. Yeah.
And my mom, like she went to my grandma was babysitting one time and she had my oldest sister and brother at that time. And apparently Terry, my big brother, who you've heard on one of the earlier episodes that I ended up working for, Terry was really fussing as a baby toddler. And so when my mom and dad got back, she was feeding him a bottle with beer in it to settle him down.
Well, there you go.
There you go. And it settled him down.
Oh, I'm sure it put him right to sleep.
And my mom had grown up very, very Mormon, and this was completely shocking and distressing to her.
Oh, this was like, okay,
No, this is not going to happen.
No,
so she said to my dad, like, we got to get out of here. I can't live near these people. Like, this is not, I can't do this. So, he moved. That's why we grew up in Logan. My mother was from the Logan area, grew up on a farm. So there's way a lot of history I know, but I think it will help us to really get a feel for how these relationships were.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad had joined the Mormon Church. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He didn't party like his brothers did. And my dad went to college. None of them went to college. And when he finished college, his dad called him and said, hey, I have a job for you. Being a millwright, like millwrights put elevators in buildings and stuff so they would make good money, but they work really hard. And my dad said, hey, I don't do that anymore. I went to college, so I didn't have to stand around those fires in the winter to stay warm. They kind of, some of them thought like, oh yeah, you think you're better than we are because you're educated and you don't drink.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all the guys married, all the brothers. And Don was an alcoholic, and he was also a very skilled craftsman, construction guy. In one of Don's jobs, he was building something. They were doing some construction in Logan, which is where you and I are from, Shelley. And so, and while he was up there, and he was married with kids, he met a woman who was kind of wild, or really wild.
Yeah.
He was having an affair with this woman. My parents became aware of it. And they didn't know what to do. Should we tell the wife? Should we not tell the wife?
Sure.
And
You know, I think that's one of the hardest positions to be in, because you love your family, mm-hmm. and that's your blood, and yet you know that he's cheating, and morally, right. you probably should tell the other spouse, but
yeah.
but also they're going to kill the messenger. Yes. You know what I mean? So it's just a vicious circle. Like that is, I think that's one of the worst places to be in life, is knowing, especially when it involves family.
Yes.
It's hard enough when you know a friend is doing it.
It's but a when terrible it's family, spot you're like, oh my gosh. To be in. And oh my gosh. Parents were in yeah. that spot. And my dad was like, yep. no, yeah. I can't tell on Don. So they hadn't told. And Don was drinking, like probably a year before that affair, Don was drinking a lot. And this is back, like, I don't know if you guys remember, if you're old enough, in the 70s, there weren't rehabs on every corner.
No.
That was almost unheard of.
No. And if you did hear him, it was more like Hollywood exactly. type. Like, you had to have a lot of money if they even had one.
And my yeah. dad was doing well. And so he took Don and flew him up to Seattle. My dad always had an airplane, which was super fun for us. And uh-huh. he put Don in his plane and flew him up to Seattle to go to rehab.
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
Because they weren't everywhere at the time.
No.
Mm-mm. And no. And my mom talks about in the plane. So my dad got out to go arrange for a car so that they could drive to the facility. And my mom was saying how Don was begging her, please, just let me have one more drink before I go in. Like, that stuff,
yeah.
that addiction is just so brutal.
It can own you. Yeah.
It really yeah, does. It takes your soul, takes yeah. your freedom, yeah. your agency.
Yeah, your money, yeah. your life.
So
any addiction.
Yeah. Any addiction yeah. does. So my dad had paid for him to go to this rehab, and he was in there for 30 days, 28 days, whatever it was. Not a short time, I think. That's a
no.
big commitment. Yeah. And then my dad was busy, and so he bought him a commercial plane ticket to come home. And back in those days, Western Airlines, which became Delta, when you got on the plane, they would give you one free drink.
Sure.
And
so after, now he's been in rehab for a month.
Yeah. So
and
after
now he's on a...
He gets on the flight. They offer one free drink. They say, can I bring you a drink? And he said, why the hell not?
Oh, no.
So by the time my dad picked him up at the Salt Lake Airport, he was drunk.
Ah. Oh.
So very, very frustrating. Now he's having an affair, drinking a lot. It just wasn't a great situation. And mm-mm. my dad took him. They had just opened St. Benedict's Hospital in Ogden. And they had uh-huh. like a rehab program there. And my dad convinced him to go to that one and got him in that facility. On the weekends, they would have like a family meeting. And so my parents went there yeah. to support him. And my aunt, his wife, was there. And apparently, Don's girlfriend and Logan, they were on the phone one time. And this is before cell phones, when you had a private conversation. And so he was on the phone at his home with his mistress. That was from Logan. That was kind of crazy. She was like 53. Don was probably 44 at that time.
Oh, okay.
So she was a little bit older.
She's a cougar.
Yep. She had called Don and she told him she was pregnant.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
At 53?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at this time, his wife has no clue that the affair is right. going on.
But one of Don's daughters heard him on the phone.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no. They heard that conversation. So when they had that family meeting that weekend, my parents were there to support Don. And Don's wife,
Barbara,
came. And
sure.
they had a break in the meeting. And
Barbara
came up to my mom and said, how he was up in Logan, you knew about this affair, didn't you? And you didn't tell me. My mom's so honest. She said, we didn't know what to do. We really debated it. We didn't know whether to tell you, not to tell you. We didn't know what the right thing to do was. So she
didn't
was...
didn't want to hurt her more.
Right.
And yet now she's pissed. Yeah.
Now she's really pissed. So she's saying, hey, how could you guys be protecting him?
Him.
In this behavior, like, this is so wrong. So she was angry at him. And
at your mom Don, and dad.
So she confronts Don, and Don is upset. And so he hears about it this weekend, and then my parents are there. So he's like, oh, can and Marie told my wife.
Oh, he doesn't realize the daughter had heard.
Right. My parents got, like, both sides were really angry at them.
Sure. Yeah.
It was just.
Yeah, they were in a lose-lose situation. Oh, there's no way. Yeah.
So horrible. So the affair's continuing. Barb's trying to decide what to do. In the meantime, my dad was building a cabin up at Bear Lake, which is a lake. I've talked about Bear Lake before because my dad built a cabin and it's beautiful. It's like the most beautiful water, freezing cold, but it's really.
Yeah, it's a beautiful lake, but it's damn cold. We're talking wetsuit in July.
Yeah, it's cold. And
but it's a huge, it also is huge.
Yeah. And so my dad had asked, he had his brothers come up and help him build different parts of it. And when Don was up there helping him, Barb actually came up and she said, look, you've got to choose either me or her. She was giving him the ultimatum. And it was really tense and an awkward, awful time for everyone. And they went over to a restaurant to eat after their day's work. And Barb was still there. They're all together. They go to this restaurant and...
So, Mom, since you were there at Bear Lake when Don and Barbara came up there, would you share with everyone, like, how that conversation happened? So,
well, we were building a cabin in Bear Lake. And
Which I love.
And Ken's brother, Don, had just got out of rehab, so he came up to help Ken. And so then I was in Logan. And Barbara drove up to go talk to his girlfriend. I knew exactly where she lived, and I didn't want to go there, but I took her there, but luckily she wasn't home. And so Don's girlfriend wasn't home. So So we went to Bear Lake, and Don, I could still see him standing in there, helping frame up our cabin. And she says, Don, I want you to tell me. You've got to pick between her and Clara. And then he says, nope, I won't pick. And so she was sad. And so she was going to leave. And Ken says, well, let's go over Garden City and have lunch. And so Don says, okay, I'll drive over separate. So we got in the car and went over there. And here came Don. And he was drunk, and he didn't have a bottle of booze. But back in those days, in the 70s, Utah didn't have a liquor store. They had them in service stations and different stores with a yellow sign up, said State Liquor Store. But liquor or alcoholic could find that. So he got a bottle, and by the time he got to Garden City, he was drunk, so he came in, and we all were just shocked. And then Barbara got up and went over and put a dime in the jukebox. And the tune she played is Lay Your Head for the Good Times.
And
Lay Your Head on My Shoulder. Please tell me you love me. Aww. One more time for the good times.
Don't look so sad. I know it's over, but life goes on, and this old world will keep on turning. Let's just be glad we had some time to spend together. There's no need to watch the bridges that we're burning. Lay your head upon my pillow. Hold your warm and tender body close to mine. Hear the whisper of the raindrops blowing soft against the window and make believe you love me one more time. For the good time.
We all just sat there, and to this day, every time I hear that song, it makes me cry.
I bet it does.
And yet she went home, and then we went to Disneyland with all our kids. And we took Barbara with us. She said, I'm going to decide whether to stay with Don or not. So she decided to stay with him. So that's, she did stay. And then it was shortly after that that her daughter heard the phone call.
And then it was over.
Then it was over.
So he's with this Claire woman who is kind of crazy. And Claire was wild. She partied. That's why she was attracted to Don. He was a partier.
Sure.
So she invites my mom to go to lunch with her friends, which my mom wouldn't fit in really well with a bunch of partying wild women.
No. So not her.
So, but she went to lunch with them. And she kind of got to be friendly with one of the women there. She said, like, she explains, like, I just did not fit with them at all. So afterwards, like, my mom decides, I think I feel close enough to that woman. I'm going to call her. So she calls the friend.
Yeah. Not the girlfriend, but the girlfriend's friend.
Yeah. And by this time, by the time they did this lunch thing, Claire had said that she had gone through this whole thing. Like, she went to Florida to have the baby at her brother's place because she didn't want to. Claire was divorced and had a lot of money, I guess. And so she went to Florida to have the baby, I guess, because back in those days, it was shameful to not be married and stuff. Now it's cool. But this was before it was cool to do that. So
are they divorced now?
Barb had started the divorce. Yes.
Okay.
She had kicked him out. Barb starts their divorce proceedings. And so Claire says, Don, you can move in with me in my house. It's Christmas time. Come spend Christmas with me. And she tells him that the baby is now at her sister's place in Seattle. Although my dad's brothers are a rough bunch of guys, they are the sweetest, gentlest guys, especially with babies and stuff.
Yeah,
and
they love.
So he was heartbroken. He's like, I want to meet my baby. And she said it was a son, and he only had one son. So he was super excited to have another son. He had a few girls, but he only had one boy. So he was really excited that she'd had a boy. And he's like, I really want to meet my son. And she said, I named him Tony, and I opened a bank account in his name. I've already deposited $10,000, which that was a lot of money back then. Mm-hmm. She said, I put $10,000 in an account for him for school. And she told him the bank that she'd put it in. And so he's living with her. It's Christmas time. And he's telling my dad this stuff. And my dad's like, really? Okay. And my mom's suspicious. So this is back before we had all the regulations. And so
You could go in and say, hey, does Susie bank here?
Yep. And so she had a friend at the bank. Okay. So she calls her friend. She explained the whole situation. She said, can you just tell me, did she open an account in Tony's name? Did she open a savings account for this kid, for her baby? And she looks and she said, there is no bank account in that name. Huh. So then my mom decides she's going to call that woman that she'd sat next to at lunch and ask her about it. So she calls her and says, you know, Claire said that she had this baby and that her sister is taking care of the baby. And the woman starts laughing. And she's like, what? She's 53. Like,
yeah, exactly. No baby.
She doesn't have a baby. No way. And so my dad tells this to Don, and Don just gets mad at him and says, like, you rotten, no good. You're just always trying to ruin my life. Now you'll kind of get an idea of how I ended up being a PI. My dad, like, figures out what the town that Claire's brother lives in Florida. And he finds the guy's number and calls him and says, did she go stay with you to have a baby? She's telling my brother that she had a baby boy that's his. And he is like, hell no, she can't have a baby. Like, yeah, she's in her 50s. Like, no way. That didn't happen. Then they looked up the sister in Seattle.
Wow.
My dad called the sister. He said, I understand that Claire's telling my brother that she has a baby and you're taking care of him. And she said, yes, I am.
What?
And he said, really? Well, I'll tell you what. She has ruined his marriage. He's getting divorced now. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to help his wife. We're going to sue Claire for alienation of affection. Remember, Claire had a lot of money. And he said, she's going to pay a lot of money for this. And we're going to name you in the lawsuit for saying that you had the baby. Because I've talked to your brother. He said that she never had the baby down there. So I think they panicked. And see, Claire was telling Don, I'm not going to let you see the baby until you stop drinking. I don't know if she just planned on him never being able to stop drinking.
Right, for sure. Because that's what they do, is they drink and party together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if she then thought, oh, if he just lives with me, then he'll fall so in love that when I'd be like, hey, guess what story I told you to trap you into this? Ha ha. Mm-hmm. And then we can have a laugh about it. I don't know what she was thinking. Either way, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad calls Don and tells him about this. And Don goes home to Claire's place and he's really angry. And he said, hey, they say that this baby doesn't exist and that you didn't really have a baby, that you're making this up and your sister's lying, but your brother said it didn't. Like, what's going on? Like, I'm losing my marriage and my kids for this. Like, what? And she said, well, let me get you a drink and let's talk. And he hadn't been drinking because he was trying to get sober enough.
So he stays sober so he could go see his baby.
Yep.
Okay. So
he hands him a drink and that's it. All bets are off. He is now drunk. And he was drinking so bad, so much that he started having seizures. And then Claire got scared and called my dad and said, you need to come and get your brother. He's not doing well. My dad drives over, picks him up, and he takes him to a rehab. I don't know if it was in Ogden again. I think it was a different one. Now there was a rehab like in Salt Lake. He takes him to that rehab. In the meantime, Don's wife is divorcing him, getting that stuff settled. And my dad went to see him at rehab after he'd been in a couple weeks. They said, you have a visitor. And Don came out. And saw it was my dad, and he's like, oh, what'd you do? Just come to see the monkey in the cage.
Oh.
And wouldn't talk to my dad, and he turned around and just walked off. And my dad was heartbroken about it. And while Don was in rehab, he met a woman in there that was addicted to pills.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no is right. So they get out of rehab, and those two got married. The divorce was final from his first wife. Claire's now out of the picture, and this third woman comes into the picture. And they're married. She's a pill addict. He's an alcoholic. He's drinking too much. She's crazy. Like,
yeah.
Oh, off the charts crazy. Don was drunk one time, and she shoved him down the stairs.
Oh, my gosh.
And when she did, it broke his leg, like his femur. And it broke it broke it so bad that he had to go to the hospital and have surgery. I think they had to put pins in. And he had a cast on from his hip to his toes.
Oh, my gosh.
When I tell you guys I hate drinking and stuff, this is...
Yeah.
This is a lot of my background with it.
It's the addictions. Yeah. Some people can go have a drink or two and be fine.
Right.
And other people have one and they're done for life. Like they cannot get away from it. And it's the same with any kind of pills.
Because of my family stuff, I really believe
the gene
I've
pool
got,
and,
we have that, that gene or the lack of gene, whichever it is. So it scares.
Well, yeah. But it's not worth. Yeah. It's not worth this. Yeah.
So he gets home from the hospital. He's got his cast on. And I think the relationship, I think the marriage wasn't going well.
Oh, you think? Let's see. What would have been the shove in the back going down the stairs?
Or
let's get you drunk before I shove you down the stairs.
Right. So Barb had sold the house and had the money from the house sale and had one of the daughters drive it over to Don at his house where he was living with this second wife. And it was, at that time it was for a large amount, but nothing like checks for houses now, I'm sure. But the check was sitting on the kitchen table. And Don still had his cast on, so his leg was propped up on a chair in that cast. Like I say, it went from hip to toe.
Right.
And Don was a big, tough guy. And breakfast was on the table. It was all made sitting on the table. And his plate was sitting there with breakfast on it. And we think that he had told her, "You're crazy, and I don't want to be married to you anymore." I think he was mad about getting pushed down the stairs. I'm just
hey, you don't know that for sure, but hey, I'm going to kind of try to guess on this one. And I don't want to make an assumption, but he might have been a little pissed.
And the check from the house was right there on the table also. What we have speculated is they were fighting about the check. And I think he said, "I'm getting divorced from you, you crazy woman. And you're not getting any of this. You're not getting a thing out of me. I'm done with you."
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
And while he's sitting there, she went in the closet and got a shotgun because those guys were very masculine guys and they were all hunters. And she went and got a shotgun and came back and put that shotgun at the back of his head on the left side and shot him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask a question because people are going to be like, "Of course." But did it kill him instantly? Because sometimes you can get shot in the head and people live. Mm. Or they live for a while. Or, you know what I mean, depending on the caliber. So
this,
it killed him
this
instantly.
Was a big shotgun. It killed him instantly. It blew part of his face off. Because of all the...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And my dad got a call from the police and they asked him if he would come down and identify his brother's body.
Ah!
And my parents got in the car and drove down and they had him.
That's horrifying.
It is horrifying. They had his body in the car and it like in the, I don't know if it was the mortician. It had to be like the morgue.
Yeah.
Because the police had custody. It was a homicide. And they pulled the sheet back. And my uncle had always, Don had been in fights. And because of the fights he'd been in, these were some rough guys. His nose was a little crooked off to the side because it had been broken. It had been off to the left. But the gunshot went from the back of his head and out at the left side of his head, out the right side. So his nose had been broken to the right. And then the gunshot moved the nose, shifted it so it was to the left. And I know that was an issue for my dad because, like, all of it scarred was like terribly traumatic for my dad. Mm-hmm. And my dad
was horrifying.
Such a tender-hearted guy, and he would have nightmares about that all the time.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Yeah,
he had nightmares for like a few years about that. And, but the wife, after she shot Don, took off running out of the house and the police found her. She was like running down the railroad tracks, gone insane, I guess, or the pills. I don't know. It's just another reason I hate all that stuff. Life's hard enough, you know, like we have a hard enough time coping. Then we add a chemical to it that we have
exactly.
No control over.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about creating like just a whole pot of crap. Like, oh.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So my Uncle Don was shot on October 9th of 1979. And she had a trial in May of 1980. I had a public defender. And in that trial, they did a bench trial. So no jury, just a judge ruling. And he found her guilty by reason of insanity. And because of that, she was sent to the state mental hospital instead of the prison. I get mixed emotions about that because, yeah, of course it's insane. It's insane to push your husband down the stairs. It's insane to grab a gun and shoot him. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And after like a year in the mental hospital, she had her attorney file an appeal with the appeals court to get out of the mental hospital saying that she's no longer ill. My family was not aware of that. I just learned this by doing research to get ready for this episode. She did this huge appeal, like, I'm not sick anymore. Apparently, she thought, at trial, she said that she believed that Don was the devil and that he had to be killed. And that's pretty insane.
Right.
On the other hand, we could almost argue anytime someone kills another person that there's insanity, because that's not your typical response unless there's like you're in danger of getting killed. But anyway, the Supreme Court ruled a year later. So when that happened, they said the judge had to decide what to do. So that judge had the same sitting judge had ordered two psychological evaluations. No, started with two and then he added two more. So there were four doctors on the case to rule whether she was insane still or not. And what they said is that she had an organic brain disorder and that if she took medication, that she would be okay. And so then it went back to the Supreme Court with that result. And the Supreme Court ruled she fought pretty hard. Her attorney fought very hard for her to get out, saying, well, she's all better now, which is pretty offensive to those of us that lost someone because she thought that he was the devil. So they ruled that she had to be in the mental hospital, even though medication could cure it, that she was enough of a danger because there was no facility, like kind of a halfway house, an outpatient program at that time. I would imagine Utah has that now, but there wasn't at the time. So if she left the hospital, it was just up to her to manage her medications. And the Supreme Court said that they didn't, because there was no facility to help her manage them, that she had to finish her time in the state mental hospital. And that was about, I believe she was in there for about 15 years when my mom called to talk to her and she'd just been released. So,
she never saw her
to have that conversation. But my dad, they had a closed casket. But then But after the public viewing, some of the family wanted to see him and to say their goodbyes. Mm-hmm. So they opened the casket. The mortician had put wax in to his face there to fill that in.
To build it up.
And, it just looked so unnatural. I'm sure they have much better stuff now. Like what we have now in every way is better. Mm-hmm. And I remember that funeral and everything when I was a kid. And it was just so tragic, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And because Don was 46 when he died. So my dad, when he saw that in the casket, my dad would have nightmares that they had an open casket and people were coming and that the wax was melting.
Oh, wow. That's horrifying.
And my dad would wake up like sweating and in distress and my mom would wake up and what's going on? And I love my dad so much that he was such a kind soul that this was, of course it's haunting. And I tell you guys, when I do a murder case, I really try not to look at the photos of the crime scene.
Yeah. No, I would
a lot of cases out.
Because they're embedded in your brain forever.
Right. And the discovery, everything written, like as I describe it to you guys, is it not vivid enough? You can see it.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you, all I have to do is like think of the murder cases that I did see the crime scene.
Yeah.
And it is like you never get rid of that.
Yeah.
You never get rid of it.
No.
So
it's a snapshot locked in your brain forever. Yeah. After he passed, did you guys remain friends?
Oh, no. He got mad at Ken because Ken had taken him to the rehab place.
Right.
And so,
but did you and Barb,
we stayed friends. She remarried, but she did like to see Ken because it reminded her too much of her husband. Because her and Don were high school sweethearts. She was cheerleader and he was All-American.
The athlete.
State football. Yeah. He was a...
Yeah.
Oh, my Don was such a tough guy. He played football for Snow College.
Uh-huh.
He had a broken collarbone and I think a broken rib.
Something like that.
Something like... I know he had at least a couple broken bones and he didn't want to tell the coach because he knew the coach
sure.
would not let him play. So he finished the season... Like with, he just thought, I'll just hit with the other shoulder. It was totally painful, but he was still all American. Like, this was a real tough guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you and Barb remained friends.
Yes, we remained friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, what a sad, what a tragedy this family had. Oh, it was. Sorry.
And the kids told me, it's a good thing you took Ken and moved him to Logan because. All of his brothers were alcoholics.
Oh, wow.
But Ken never did drink when he was a kid.
Oh, we love Ken. I loved Ken. He was such a darling man. Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking. I can't imagine every time you hear that song, you know.
I know. Well, when we went to the funeral, there was a big, big bouquet of flowers there from Claire. Uh-huh. It said Claire. And the girls came up to me and said, this is from somebody in Logan. Do you know who it is? And I said, yes, I do. And I says, I'll tell her, thank you. And I just grabbed the card, threw it in the car.
Yeah. Well, and thank heavens you have the foresight to do that because that would just add a whole other layer of hurt to those girls.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
So it was good you did that. Yeah.
They never heard this story till later in life.
Yeah.
Don lived... One another thing that was sad about Don, being all-state at football, he had one boy out of four. And the kid was playing in state championship game in Salt Lake. And Don said, well, I want to go see my boy play. So he left our house in Logan to go down and never made it to the game. And Brian was so sad. His daddy.
Oh, I bet he was heartbroken.
One day. Yep, it was. Wow. And that's what alcohol does to you.
Yep.
Because these.
Those addictions. If you know, man.
The Lindquist boys, they loved kids and they loved their kids so much.
Yeah. What a tragic, tragic life.
It is very tragic. And what's interesting was that Don's kids had seen Don with his alcoholism. And none of them, they didn't drink, they didn't touch it. They hated what it did to their dad. And it, you know, people will go
one way. Well, and their whole life. It changed their whole life.
He missed events. Yeah. He missed.
Yeah, my mom was heartbroken.
Yeah, the chaos that created in their world was horrible. Where my brothers experimented with it and got.
Yeah.
Lost one of them got lost in it for so I like it's horrible so that's kind of more of a background why I hate that addiction. I mean, not that anyone likes it, it's horrible, and that was back that was before it was prevalent. Now like the drugs that are unleashed on the world, it's scary, really scary stuff itself.
Yeah, for sure. So for sure.
But I, you know, it doesn't matter because that story happened in the 70s, right?
Right.
That story could be today because.
Oh, absolutely. And it is today in someone's life.
It is today in someone's life. Yeah. There's some crazy woman out there telling lies to some guy, messing up that marriage. Not that he doesn't have agency and can choose, but.
But he's the one that started the whole thing by looking outside your marriage, stupid.
Chaos, like human behavior. It's why we still. You can read a Shakespearean play and it's still like, oh my gosh, like this is
this
amazing.
Just happened in my neighborhood.
Because people are people.
Yeah, for sure.
That one is a very personal one. And I was excited to share the story because it's such a crazy story. Yeah. And
for sure.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. sadly, yeah. my cousin.
Stay clean. Yeah. Stay sober. Yes.
And if you yeah. need help.
Know your limits. If you no, need seriously. Help, seriously. Know your get no help. Limits. Yeah.
And, you know, my yeah. my mom was, I was like, at having her refresh my memory on this stuff. She was reminding me, like, my Uncle Don, my dad would talk to him and said, hey, you know, you've got a problem. We need to get you help. And Don would say, well, when I start drinking in the mornings, then I have a problem.
Oh, okay. Well, at least he had a boundary.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of funny because.
But 12:01, it's good. I'm going. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Isn't it funny how he found a way to excuse his behavior
yeah.
by that?
Oh, exactly.
Like, oh, I don't have a problem unless I wake up drinking.
Exactly. And
yeah, interesting.
But one of my mom's memories about all this was at that rehab meeting in Ogden at the St. Benedict's Hospital when the family came. Mm-hmm. People were sharing their stories, and my mom had grown up Mormon and they didn't drink. And they didn't have any of that stuff. So this was so outrageous to her. And to this day, she still remembers there was a woman who was in there and said, you know, I couldn't figure out how my husband was getting drunk. There was no alcohol in the house. I monitored everything. I looked everywhere, and he would go out and mow the lawn, and he would just sit down in the sun, just sit and just lay on the lawn and rest. And then he would come in and I would swear he was drunk. I couldn't figure it out. Ultimately, she went and looked where he was sitting in the lawn. He had dug a little hole in the lawn and had his drink, his bottle, in the lawn.
No.
And he had a straw that came up out of it. And he would lay on the lawn and pretend like
and drink.
And he would be drinking. So he'd come in from lawn mowing drunk.
Oh my gosh. And he was drunk. Okay, that's so funny.
So when people,
that's funny.
So when someone's an addict, they're creative. They will do anything to get it.
Anything.
Which we can also do anything to get out of stuff too, to grab hold. Yeah. So if you know someone that needs help, please pray for them, love them, and try to get them help.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Pamela Private Eye. Thank you.